Kemba Walker is going to miss his first game back from the All-Star break, which is fine. It's fine. It's fine. I'm fine. It's fine. I'm fine. It's good. It's fine. Rainy days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play, when the F's done I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. Wow.
Right away, huh? Right away. We're going to do this. All right. Let's do this. So, I'm John Corrales, first of all. If you don't know, now you know. I cover the team for Mass Live, and I'm here for you Monday through Friday, except for this week, which was a special kind of week where we reunited with the Rain and Jays. Jay King, Sam Jam Packard, they have moved over to The Athletic, and now I do this show by myself with some help from time to time. So we decided to get back together because we all still like each other despite the games we play with each other on Twitter. So we thought it'd be fun to take advantage of the All-Star break to do a two-part podcast. So if you listened to the Wednesday podcast and didn't listen on Thursday or wondering where the Thursday podcast was, this week the Thursday podcast is on Anything is Potable. So if you are wondering about that for some reason and you haven't listened to the Thursday show, go check out the Anything is Potable with the three of us, where we continue that two-part podcast. So we did do a Monday through Friday podcast. It's just that one of those podcasts exists somewhere else this week. So that was fun. And to answer one of the questions, because this is a mailbag episode as well, one of the questions that we got and questions that we got throughout the past few days, we are going to do this again. And we are going to find time, whether it's at some point during the season or the playoffs or summer league or something like, you know, they've gone off and, you know, they're going to do their own podcasts and obviously we're going to do our own thing here. So, but we will get together from time to time. That's definitely something we're going to do. And I'm excited to be able to do that. So now on to the news of the day, which is Kemba Walker is going to miss the game in Minnesota with knee soreness. And I said after the All-Star game that Kemba blowing through a minutes restriction was not great, but if he didn't miss any time, then it should be fine. Now to find out that he's going to miss the first game of this road trip, it's less than ideal. And I'm trying to keep things calm and under control here. I feel like this would be a great, I should have called Chuck McKinney because Chuck would have lost his mind. And rightfully so, rightfully so. This is an opportunity. This is something where fans should be upset. I'm totally fine with fans being upset. This is an appropriate time to kind of vent a little frustration because that shouldn't have happened. That just shouldn't have happened. And if he was healthy enough to play in the All-Star game under a minutes restriction, then he should have played under that minutes restriction. That let me just be clear here. I'm okay with him playing in the All-Star game. That was an honor that you have to understand that guys take very seriously. And he was healthy enough. The team determined that he was healthy enough to play under a minute's restriction. So that's fine. If he and the team made that determination, that's fine. I'm okay with that. I'm not the one who's going to sit here and say he shouldn't have played. And he started that fourth quarter, he started hot, and assuming that he was within that minutes restriction, that's fine. I'm not even blaming Kemba for this, because players get caught up in things. And it's not really entirely up to the player to say, oh, yeah, you know what? I don't want to play in this awesome all-star game where guys are playing hard and it's a lot of fun. Like, it's really no different than when you eat too much or drink too much or do something fun to excess. Like, when you get caught up in moments, you get caught up in moments. And you do something a little too much, a little too hard. We've all done it, and I'm certainly not going to blame Kemba for, you know, trying to sneak some extra minutes in there because it was an awesome thing, and I would want to be on the floor for that too. I blame Nick Nurse and whomever, the Raptors coaching staff, somebody on that bench, somebody on that staff needed to know that Kemba was on a minutes restriction. Someone needed to pull him out of that game and sit him down and be like, sorry, you've reached your whatever the number was, 20, 25, whatever that number was. Once he hit it, they had to get him out. They had to get him out. Okay, you are the coaching staff of an opposing team, and you owe it to your counterparts, your colleagues, to not screw with their players, with their futures, and to ignore or miss or forget or whatever it is, a minutes restriction for a top player, a number one, number two player on a team that is contending for a finals, for a championship, to forget that, whatever it is, that is kind of unforgivable. That's where I'd be most upset. That whatever happened there, that's just not cool. Because if it was Brad Stevens playing Kyle Lowry all of those minutes, and Kyle Lowry started to miss time, people in Toronto would rightfully be upset. Whatever, whomever it is, you're coaching the All-Star team. You have one job, two jobs. Make sure everybody gets the right playing time and make sure everybody stays healthy. That's all. I mean, you can't, if somebody sprains an ankle or something, you can't deal with that. You can't, but like, you can't overtax somebody, and especially a guy on a minutes restriction. And now, I think Kemba's going to be fine. I think they're being cautious. I think they're being overly cautious. And so I still think Kemba's going to be fine. He wasn't limping out. He didn't say that he was hurt. I think they're being especially cautious. So I'm not even like thinking, oh, this could cost the Celtics. I don't think it really does. The Celtics have been great this season, down a guy. And I'm not exactly like extraordinarily worried about Minnesota. Sorry, Timberwolves fans. But this concept, it's really upsetting because it's another coach that basically didn't do what the Celtics needed him to do to keep their player healthy. And, you know, who knows? Maybe if he had come out and done the minutes restriction, and he'd still be too sore to play anyway, then this conversation would be different. Then we'd have to question the Celtics training staff for letting him. I don't know. I really don't know, because I don't have, like, I'm inside, I'm with the team, but I'm not in the locker room. I'm sorry, I'm not in the training room to know. And they'll never tell us this level of information, you know, unless somebody gets in good with one of the trainers and has a source. That's certainly not me. Like, I just don't know. I just got to go by what I know and what I hear and what I see. So I think Kemba's going to be fine. I don't think it's a huge deal, but it is still problematic. It's problematic that he's missing a game, a Celtics game, because seemingly he played too much. Apparently that was 15 minutes, and I just never went back to check the time. Brian Robb of Boston Sports Journal did go and said that it was like 15 minutes. 15 minutes of competitive basketball in a row in an exhibition. That's just That's just crap. You know? And if it does become something, if this knee thing does become something, boy, then the All-Star game really becomes a problem. And we just got to hope that it's not. We've got to hope that these guys are telling us the truth. They're being cautious and they're looking at the long-term thing, and it's going to be okay. But the Celtics are fighting for seeding, and I know that they would love to get to that 2 seed. I know they want to be healthy first, and a fully healthy team at the 3 seed is better than a not so healthy team at the 2 seed. I get all of that, but just want to express my dismay and say that there is a justifiable anger, upset, whatever you want to call it, at this. So I'll just leave it at that. There are Kemba questions, which I will get to, including whether he gets a free pass. I'll address that and then get to your questions in just a moment.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So I did put out the call for mailbag questions, and you guys responded, as usual, with the hashtag LOCeltics, because that's an easy way for me to put everything together. So if you're just responding to Twitter, it's a good chance I'm not going to see it, because I click on the hashtag, and there's my list of questions. So please include the hashtag LOCeltics if you're going to tweet a question at me. So at jswizzle94, does Kemba get a free pass for getting wrapped up in the emotion of the All-Star game? Playing high minutes, does Nick Nurse deserve the blame? I did kind of go over that. I am giving Kemba a pass because, like I said, it's not on him necessarily. Very easy for a player to get caught up in that moment. And you know what? That knee soreness, if it's the same thing that I've had my entire life, basically, that tendonitis, it can feel good in the game. It can feel good when you're playing. It can get sore afterwards. And so I can understand why he'd be like, no, I'm good. So I don't blame Kemba for wanting to play, getting caught up in the moment. That's all on the coaching staff. They should have known better, and they should have stuck with that, I'm assuming, is the team, the Celtics, saying to the Raptors coaches and Nick Nurse, hey, let's keep Kemba to whatever minutes restriction. You know, I'd like to think that there was some level of communication. That I don't know, because as I said in the other podcast a couple days ago, I never got a chance to ask Nick Nurse about the playing time. They never called on me after the All-Star game, and it was a tough media situation. So unless somebody asks him the question and he answers it, and I get wind of it, or when the Celtics, if it never comes up, then I'll have to ask him myself in 2 weeks or whenever the Raptors and Celtics play. So we'll leave that there. And then at Jai Hawk, why on earth would Kemba play in the All-Star game and then be available? I guess he means unavailable to play tomorrow. Who makes that call? I mean, that's the training staff. And so if the training staff said he was healthy, then he was healthy. And then if all of a sudden the soreness is worse, then the soreness is worse. It's just kind of, it's up to them and the player to determine the player's health and availability. It's not up to the coaching. Although I'm sure a coach can come in and kind of, what's the word? Overrule. If they say, hey, he's healthy, I'm sure the coach and management can come in and be like, nope, you know what? You're not playing in that All-Star game. But that does cause problems. You don't want to get down that road, because if the training staff says he's healthy and he says he's healthy, and then not letting him play would really, it causes unnecessary tension. That game is important to players. It's very important to players. Got to be clear about this. That is an important thing. You and I can sit here and say it was just an exhibition, and that's true, but it's important to the players, especially the Kobe thing, especially that particular All-Star game. It was important for those guys to be there. It was important for Kemba to be there. It was important for Kemba to be there with Jason Tatum. Like, it was a big deal to him. So I'm not blaming him one bit for wanting to be there and being there. So I've said my piece. Now let's move forward to at Prof Chop, who submitted many questions and comments. But let's start with this. Considering another injury for Kyrie, by the way, Kyrie, season-ending arthroscopic surgery on his shoulder. So Kyrie's season is over. Now, back to the question. Considering another injury for Kyrie, how lucky are the Celtics to have Kemba in his place? Did he look at other spots before choosing Boston? Was there ever any talk of trading Kyrie last season as it became clear he wasn't returning? I don't think so. I think the Celtics' plan A last year was to convince Kyrie to stay and keep Al Horford and make it work and then hope for what we see from Tatum now and what we see from Jaylen Brown now and what we see from Gordon Hayward now. And I'm sure in Danny Ainge's best case scenario, those three guys all make the steps that they made this season, and then Kyrie falls back into Cleveland Kyrie and now appreciates the fact that he's got all these great players around him, and Al Horford is there for a pick and pop, pick and roll partner, and they have a great team moving forward. I don't know what Kemba's other interest was, if he had any other interest. That thing kind of happened. It fell apart quickly. And once it became clear that the Charlotte Hornets weren't going to offer him not just the Supermax, but a regular max, once it became clear that they were moving in a different direction, I think the Celtics kind of swooped in. Because at that point, the Celtics had Kyrie had just left and Al Horford had just dropped the bomb on them, and they had to pivot quickly. And once the word got out that Kemba was done in Charlotte, they swooped in. So I don't know that there was a big, a lot of choices or big recruiting or whatever. They came in quick and said, "Hey, we'd love to have you." And I think he just said, "Hey, Boston sounds good. I'll go to Boston." And the Celtics had the opportunity to give Charlotte Terry Rozier, and they liked that idea for some reason. So that's how it worked out. So I don't think there was anything beyond that. Let's go to at @bleedgreen_36. Do you think how well or bad the Celtics do in the playoffs this season will affect our roster for next year in a major way, parentheses, trading Tice or Smart? Or do you think Danny will give us more than one season with the main guys intact? So I don't think there's going to be, like, Marcus Smart's not going anywhere. Marcus Smart only goes somewhere if a major player is available. You know, then he becomes Marcus Smart plus pieces and picks for a major piece. And I don't know that a major piece is available this summer. I don't know about Tice. I would think that Tice stays. The Celtics have most of this team under contract. And I think they will. It depends on, I guess, who they lose to in the playoffs, how they lose. If they play well and lose in the first round for some reason, then I'm sure there's always going to be some reevaluation. But I don't think any of the major players are going to be at risk. I can see some possibility. Tice, maybe. If the Celtics feel like Robert Williams is ready to be a starter, and maybe you package Tice and, you know, some smaller pieces for somebody else, I don't know. Even then, I think they kind of like what they have. I don't know how you can look at this season and not like what they have. Not that I'm accusing this Twitter user here of that. I'm saying this team has competed very well. Tatum has taken this leap. I'm assuming that when they come back next year, I don't want to say that there's going to be like linear progress because it's never linear. There's always going to be some element that changes and we don't know what that is, but things look good for them right now. And with Kemba, as we said in the reunion podcast, I mean, he fits so well. He's exactly what this team needs. I don't see any big changes coming. I think this is going to be a quiet offseason. I don't think there's going to be a lot of players available. And I just think the Celtics feel good. So more questions coming up, including going after one of the Philly guys. We'll see. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all of the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans, but you may not know that Locked On Celtics is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Celtics fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners, not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Celtics fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. So text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help you and your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising and we look forward to hearing from you. Back to the questions in the mailbag for this final segment. At Old School Shoes, Toronto had six different guys score 30 plus in a game, not at the same time. That would be a record. Boston's had five different guys who have scored 30 in a game. I'm curious how historically relevant it is. Maybe it's not that rare, but I can't think of many other teams that boast this. I tried to look. I don't know how to find that answer, honestly. I feel like, without pouring through a ton of box scores, but I feel like the good teams have had the ability for a bunch of guys to score 30 in a game. You can go back throughout history. It's happened plenty, I'm sure, but it is a sign of a good team that a different guy can go off for 30. And you know, just like the Celtics, any one of these good players can go off. And so you can look around the league and look at the good teams. I'm sure Milwaukee with Giannis and Middleton and, you know, I'm sure Brook Lopez had a game where he hit a bunch of threes and can score 30. If he didn't, he did last year. There are opportunities for guys to come in and hit shots and hit a bunch of threes and whatever, and especially nowadays with the three-point, the prevalence. But I'm sure it's the good teams, you know what I mean? So by having a bunch of guys that can score 30 in a game, the good teams will more likely have that. So go through any of the Golden States, I'm sure other great teams have had that happen. So sorry, I don't have the exact answer though. I really don't know how to find that. Back to Prof Chop, who says, "What's the most solid bench rotation we can expect moving forward this season and into the playoffs? Is Time Lord return really in the cards? Will Poirier ever see any productive minutes?" Working backwards, Poirier will not see any productive minutes. I just don't think he's ready. I don't know what he's going to be long term. Maybe this is as good as he's ever going to be. Maybe this is just a tough introduction first year and he can get better. I mean, he's got the tools. He's got some tools. I think he can be productive, more productive than he's shown, but it's hard to say because he's had such limited opportunity. So, but he's under contract for a couple more years, so he'll have an opportunity to prove himself a little bit. Time Lord's return really is in the cards. He's not on this road trip. He's with the team. He's not playing on this road trip, but they're ramping up his workouts. So I'm sure as I get out there for LA and Portland, I'll see him out there on the floor working out, getting a good sweat going, dunking, and really getting ready for a return to action. So the most solid bench rotation, it's going to be Marcus Smart and Robert Williams and Grant Williams. The combination of those three guys plus the starters, I mean, that eight guys, you throw Cantor in as needed. I'm thinking that you phase Cantor out just a little bit and make him more situational. And I think we saw that earlier this season. So obviously Smart is one of the big rotation guys off the bench. Grant and Robert Williams and Enes Kanter are your situational guys. And after that, like, you just stagger the Gordon Haywards, Jaylen Browns of the world. And you just, after the first 6 minutes of a quarter, you figure out who's going to play 10 minutes in that quarter and who's going to play those six, and then come back when, you know, the end of the first quarter, the second quarter starts. So your bench rotation is going to include starters. And that's, we always think about the starting unit and then bench unit, but your second unit lineups, quote unquote, are going to include a fair amount of starters. So that's what I see. At Kona King Kahuna asks, if the 76ers do not make the Eastern Conference Finals and during the summer both Embiid and or Simmons become available, watching the All-Star game and the chemistry between Simmons and Tatum, who should the Seas actively pursue and at what cost? Well, let's look at this. First of all, the Sixers are not trading anybody to the Celtics. The Celtics and Sixers are not swapping guys. There's just, that's not going to happen. So I can't even really entertain the thought, but I want to answer the question at least to show you why. Simmons and Tatum, first of all, the chemistry between Simmons and Tatum in the All-Star game, and that was the All-Star game. That was where stats don't count and everybody's looking for some highlights and throwing alley-oops to one another. I'm not going to make anything of that chemistry. So I don't want to go too crazy about that. If you bring Ben Simmons in, it's going to cost a lot. His salary next year is just about $29 million. So who do you trade for a guy making $29 million? Let's assume that Gordon Hayward, what does he do? Does he opt in? He's not going to opt in just to get traded to Philly. You know, that's not going to, the Celtics aren't going to sign him if he opts out to a long-term deal and then say, hey, by the way, psych, we're going to send you to Philadelphia. No, that's not going to happen. So Gordon Hayward is out of this discussion. Jaylen Brown, do you trade Jaylen Brown for Ben Simmons? No. Why would you take away a shooter for a non-shooter? You've already got Kemba Walker. Are you trading Kemba Walker for Ben Simmons? No. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I understand that Ben Simmons is fantastic in transition, fantastic defensively, but it's not what the Celtics do. He's not right for the Celtics. The Celtics need a guy out there on the perimeter that's going to shoot. And so I don't understand going after him to add to this, which means if you actually pursue somebody, it would have to be Embiid. Although I'm not an Embiid fan. Like, he can be so good, but he is consistently out of shape. I mean, unless the Celtics can whip him into shape, and even then, next year, $27.5 million. So who do you trade? Same scenario. You're not going to trade any of your bigs because Philly's going to want something big back. So it's going to take Jaylen Brown. Now, if you want to justify it and say, we're going to have Kemba, Gordon, and Tatum, and Jaylen can go be the centerpiece of what Philly's trying to do next, it takes away one of the wings that you can sort of spare. If you believe that Romeo Langford is going to be good and he can kind of mitigate some of that loss, and now you have a starting lineup. You send Jaylen Brown plus, I don't know, whatever that package would be. I don't know what that package would be. I haven't really thought about that. But it certainly wouldn't be Tatum. And it certainly wouldn't be, like, Smart. That's not enough for Philly. So that's, it's not something that I would want to do. But Embiid, you know, you can sit there and make a, you know, a fantasy situation of, like, well, Kemba with Gordon and Tatum and Embiid as your starters, and then you throw in, is Langford your stretch four? Or Grant Williams, you're four. And, you know, that could be something. It hurts me. Can you feel the pain in my voice just talking about this? It's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. But I can talk myself into Embiid fitting a much more discipline system and him not having to be the number one guy. I can kind of be talked into that. But I don't want that. I would rather just kind of run it back with what the Celtics have. But that's just, I'm being swayed by how poorly, but the troubles that they're having in Philly. And I'm recording this show during a game where Philly had a 22-6 lead over Brooklyn and then fell behind Brooklyn by 20, like within the course of a quarter. And now it's a 7-point game, but Philly's struggling. And, you know, Embiid, you can tell in my voice, it's like Embiid's an all-star and all of that, but he's so immature. He's unable to kind of really live up to what his promise is. I don't like his conditioning. I don't like his shot selection sometimes. I just don't know. I don't know what the future is there, but I'm not really a fan of that. So I'm going to stop talking. At Kona King Kahuna, I really went all out for you there. I'm not going to lie. I humored the question, even though it's not going to happen. So I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to say thanks for everybody who is listening for the first time. I hope you've enjoyed this show. If you've been sampling recently, thank you very much. Even if you don't think this is the best podcast out there, still make it part of your rotation. I don't care if you listen to us first, second, third. Just listen. That'd be great. And share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.